The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Hi there, I'm Timothy Harvey, and I am sitting right across the bunker from Mr. Jason Hunt.
Hello, hello.
And this is H2O, our weekly podcast of things. Things, stuff, and other things and stuff.
Yes.
We talk about quite a few interesting things. We have a couple different topics we're going to bounce our heads around tonight.
Yeah, but before we do...
Yes.
I want to,
You want to,
I want to, that's kind of how my week has been.
I just swung in there somewhere.
We do have, like you've heard on many a show, we do have a sponsor here, SuperheroStuff.com. And they have a special going on. I'm just going to mention it right up front. They have the superhero gift guide has gone online because the holidays are right around the corner, and they wanted us to be sure to mention that. In addition, now through December 18th, or while supplies last, whichever comes first, they've got this thing called the Hero Box, which is basically you spend money and you get a box, and there's stuff in the box. You don't know what's coming in the box. But through December 18th, they have the Star Wars Hero Box that's available. So we're going to link to those, and you can check those out as well as everything else that they've got going on over at SuperheroStuff.com. We do appreciate their support. And if you want to join our conversation, you can call our hotline 573-42-SCI-FI, or you can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. And let's get a little controversial. How about those red cups?
Oh yeah. They have coffee. They have coffee in them.
Isn't that the stupidest thing?
Well, you know, it's a funny old world, and at the risk of alienating a future sponsor, because if Starbucks wants to give us some money to help produce the show. I'm sorry. Starbucks coffee always tastes burnt to me.
Well, see, you know, and I see complaints about Starbucks product on the one hand. But then I also see people saying, you know, I've got friends who are Christians, and I've got people that go to Starbucks. I can't find anybody that's actually really upset about all this.
No. Well, okay. So... So, you know, we are not going to spend talking about religion. But here's the thing.
Well, we're not going to spend an hour talking about Starbucks either.
But. Right, welcome to the media. And whether you are, no matter what your political affiliations may be, I want you to remember one very, very important thing. And here we are. Of course, we're in some degree of the media ourselves right here. Remember one very, very important principle. If it bleeds, it leads. So, yep. if it is remotely controversial and can get you clicks or views or sell papers or get listens or watch the video or whatever.
It kind of reminds me of RoboCop. How the media is portrayed in RoboCop. And then you look also at The Dark Knight Returns. Of course, Frank Miller wrote both of them.
Sure.
So this idea that the media sensationalizes everything and turns everything into something. And
well, we've talked about this before with the trolls online, with the folks who... Yeah. Because they now have a platform where they can yell. And, of course, this whole thing seems to have started with one guy getting, you know, upset for what objectively, to me... And others may disagree, but objectively to me, are fairly ridiculous reasons.
Oh yeah, I mean yeah.
But he got a lot of views, and therefore dot 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 dot, it all spirals. And unfortunately, I just saw some other a fairly prominent religious figure, and I guess in the Southern Baptist thing, has jumped on the bandwagon because I don't know, he was bored. I don't know what's wrong with him, but unfortunately. It's become a thing. So, frankly, you know...
But it's not going to be our thing.
We're going to talk about another thing. This coffee tastes better that we are drinking right now.
Yes.
That is, it is not burnt flavored. And, you know, hey...
Good to the last drop.
I will... If someone... You know, Starbucks, you know, by all means, convince me I'm wrong. Well, I'm a sponsor.
And you know, we talked the other night on Level 117 how it would be nice to have Dr. Pepper as a sponsor.
Oh, sure.
You know, I mean, we're in that stage now where we're looking at a lot of different things coming into the end of the year and the beginning of the year, and it would be nice to have some sponsorships in place.
Oh, sure, to launch that. You know, not that we haven't done a lot of cool stuff here without financial help from outside sponsors.
Yeah.
You know, like anything else.
And we do appreciate our support over at Patreon.
Oh, of course. Our Patreon, the fact that superhero stuff is as supportive as they are, and you know, that our audience is as supportive as they are. We've got plans. We've got schemes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We want world domination. Doesn't everybody?
Sure. Speaking of world domination.
Yes.
Cthulhu. Let's talk about the World's Fantasy Awards.
Yes.
World Fantasy Society Society has officially decided now to eliminate the bust of H.P. Lovecraft as their statue award that they give out every year. And ostensibly, I mean, the main reason that you could give for making this decision is the fact that Lovecraft's fantasy work has not stood the test of time. He is known now for the Cthulhu mythos. He's you know, science fiction and aliens and monsters, and you know, if it's psychological horror and science fiction horror, his fantasy stuff hasn't stuck around.
Well,
so you don't think of him as a fantasy writer.
Well, the fantasy stuff which is really held up is things like Through the Gates of the Silver Key, but that ties into the greater Cthulhu mythos.
Right.
So it doesn't really stand on its own.
Yeah, it's of a piece.
You're right. And I think that, you would most people would think of him as a horror writer. Mm-hmm. We've talked about before the fact that you could all argue rather convincingly that by the end of his writing career, he was writing science fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Where he had basically the Cthulhu mythos while
they were aliens.
Yeah. And it works because we've talked about the connection between science fiction and horror before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here he is, you know, reinforcing that. So, yeah, you could very easily sit there and go, well, you know, he's not really a fantasy author.
But,
however,
that's not why they're getting rid of the bust.
Right.
They're getting rid of the bust because Howard Phillips Lovecraft was a racist.
Yes.
He was a terrible, evil, despicable person to be set down in a corner with Orson Scott Card.
Well, actually, he was a racist. And we've talked about this before, and this is a personal bugbear of mine.
Mm.
Context.
Yes.
Okay, so everybody's got that relative. All right? You've got that uncle or that grandfather or that grandmother.
My grandmother does it.
Okay. And they will periodically say some of the most terrible things, and you will look at them and go, what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
And you forget, and it's easy to do, that the world changes, and the way you grew up and the world you grew up in shapes you. This is not necessarily an excuse. It's just...
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
I mean,
so, you look at and we've talked about this before, the world has changed drastically in our lifetimes. We went from, you know, phones you could kill a man with, bolted to the wall.
Yeah.
Because if they fell off the wall, they'd crush a small child. You know, family pet might go out, you know, it's like, oh, no, the phone fell. And now if you try and throw something, you could throw your phone at somebody. But they'd be like, ow, stop throwing your cell phone at me.
Yeah, you'd break the screen.
I know.
You wouldn't break anything on
right.
the person.
And it'd be a lot more expensive to get the phone fixed than to bury the body. So you go with the heavy, I mean, I didn't say it. So the world changes massively. The world my daughter is in at 25 is different, very different from the world when I was 25.
And that wasn't so long ago, despite the fact that we make the joke about our age.
Yeah, so it's the acceleration You know, the joke is the old. No, it's a joke, but the perception is the older you get, the faster time goes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, we don't even need that. All you have to do is look at the last 20 years, 20, mm-hmm. 25
yeah.
years.
Oh, yeah.
And you can watch the world zip by. And that's great because we're, you know, we're three steps away from hoverboards. And
it's great in some ways.
Right. There are advantages and disadvantages as well. Yep. But there's the same disadvantages of the passage of time and generational change anyway. It's a little faster now, but it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So to look at Lovecraft and recognize that he was racist is a statement of fact. Lovecraft was a racist.
And it is a reflection of the time, the world we live in now.
Right. Looking back.
The perception looking back at him, sure.
You have to, but you know, again, it is, we just, 50 years, Selma,
mm-hmm.
50 years ago.
Yeah.
That in terms of national time, in terms of cultural time, in terms of the turning of the planet in the orbit of the sun.
Drop in a bucket.
It's very fast. And it could be faster. You look at the what's happened with gay rights. Culturally, that's very, very fast. Mm-hmm. We have not, you know. And we forget that the world that places people like H.P. Lovecraft lived in, institutional racism was a thing that affected the vast majority of people. You would have people who would be certainly would be advocating for black rights, immigrant rights,
equality,
yeah, women's equality, rights. Everything, and you would have those folks because they existed.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority, the built-in cultural racism was there, okay?
Right.
So,
and some of that was just inculcated. It wasn't one of those things. It wasn't a conscious,
no,
I hate blacks, right. I hate Asians, and or anything had, like that. It was just part of the
right. It was,
you know, the time,
well,
the neighborhood.
And of course, you also have to bear in mind that Lovecraft was an Anglophile. And the English Empire still existed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was very much a people talk about white privilege now. It's nothing compared to what it was at the turn of the century, and the first part of the century. I mean, the British Empire. If World War II had not happened, if England hadn't been nearly bombed into the ground, and the Empire had continued, or the Age of Empire is gone.
Right.
But I mean, if that had maintained, the idea that, you know, the
The imperialism,
the
and
white, the white savior,
the superior,
you know,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It was built into the culture. Okay, so
well, and so much so that you get websites now, especially, you know, like in our genre, in our,
sure,
arena,
uh-huh,
that call out the whole white savior trope.
Oh, sure.
Even when it's not there, they're seeing it, even when it's not one of those conscious things that we just happen, you know, we,
right,
just happen to cast a white guy for this, or we just, mm-hmm, happen to cast a black guy for this character, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think a majority of the time, I think we have gotten to a point where we are so hypersensitized to everything, every little slight. I mean, you look at what happened at the University of Missouri. That thing blew up so much bigger because of why? You know, media coverage, actual slights against people. I mean, who knows? No, I mean, the stories that are coming out of
we're going to be unpacking
scrambled.
That for a while.
Yeah.
We're going to be unpacking that for a while. I think.
But I think people nowadays find it easier, and we've talked about this before, with the internet making people rude and stupid. Mm-hmm. I think people don't have the same filters that they used to have, and people nowadays find it much easier and safer to be offended by something.
Well,
whatever, you know, pick your side, whatever.
Sure.
You know, but it's, oh, how dare you, as opposed to, why do you think that?
Oh, sure. No, I think there's luckily we still have people who are asking why people think that.
Right. Okay. Those people are now retroactively applying that to all of history.
Well, but are you
and
but
sometimes it's not
oh, sure,
appropriate but, to do that.
But you've got again, it's the platform has changed. Okay. We used mm-hmm. to be the crazy people were standing on the street corner ranting about the end of the world. Okay.
Now they're elected officials.
Well, they're that too. But then you got the people who are, you know, they're on the they're on the internet. Mm-hmm. And they've got a YouTube following.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's important to remember that and hey, you know, it's your statue. Do as you please.
Right.
You know, and I'm not going to disagree with you. You're saying, okay, we feel that Lovecraft was racist. We prefer to go something else. Good, well, that's fine. But
yeah,
also bear in mind the context and well, that he was and hardly
me,
alone.
Yeah, and to me, it makes sense to change it because he wasn't a fantasy writer. He's not known mm-hmm. for his fantasy work. Okay, fine.
Right.
If you had just done that and stopped there, fine. Because you don't have to have the context. You don't have to sit there and go, Lovecraft was racist. All you got to do is just sit there and say, Lovecraft wrote science fiction. He didn't write fantasy.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And be done with it.
Well,
but then you got to make it a thing.
Well, but also I think that...
This goes back, I mean, this is the same kind of mess what we saw in the Hugos.
Sure.
You know, you've got people who are choosing to be offended one way or the other about whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a reason. The programs are printed on pink paper? How dare you? You know, it's that kind of thing.
Well, it's more expensive. Whatever. Okay, I don't know.
You know, you use Comic Sans?
Okay.
Two spaces after the sentence? What?
All right. You know, that is wrong. And it will not be allowed.
Two spaces and Comic Sans?
Comic Sans.
Would even be worse.
The punishment will be severe. No, well, okay.
But see, that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with.
I know.
That's
but,
what we...
But,
that's, it's all over.
But here's and I've talked about this before too, okay? I disagree with Orson Scott Card on many, many things,
mm-hmm.
okay? My child is gay. His views on gay people make me very upset. However, Ender's Game is a work of genius.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay?
It's brilliant.
The first few Alvin Maker books, I really liked them. I lost steam. I can't tell you why. Okay, I can't point to a thing.
Right. But it wasn't because of his beliefs.
No. And it's fascinating to me. You know, here's my aside for the night. The Orson Scott Card aside. You read Ender's Game, and it's all about trying to understand the other,
mm-hmm.
which seems directly contradictory to Orson Scott Card's worldview.
And I'll take issue with that because understanding the other does not necessarily mean that you accept his choices,
but
that you endorse
the
choices.
But there's a level of...
You can disagree with someone and still understand where
there's a level of
from.
Passing judgment from that man and from that worldview
mm-hmm.
that is not in Ender's Game.
Right.
Let me qualify that. In the character of Ender.
Right.
There's certainly that in the other characters.
And I can agree with that.
Okay, so, my little aside there.
It fits.
Sure.
I mean,
well,
part
it is.
Of this
it is, and I think you can't. I mean, okay. Look, this happens. This happens in many, many great works of art. Okay, there are
Steinbeck.
Steinbeck, or you know, and not every. Okay, the art. It is really hard, and I completely understand people who can't do this. It is hard to separate the art from the artist.
Yeah.
Okay. Because art is very personal. And it's very personal from the person who's viewing the art
mm-hmm.
because it gets a reaction.
Right.
And, but it's also very personal for the person who creates the art.
And all of that is because of your own individual experiences
sure.
in your life.
Right.
It's going to color how you perceive things.
Yes. And, you know, but you look at some of the great artists of our time and previous centuries. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were awful people. Just terrible human beings.
Oh, yeah.
Jackson Pollock. He's an amazing artist. He was not a nice guy. Andy Warhol, you know, whether you think his stuff is art, and it is. I've got an art degree. I can say that
right.
authoritatively. Sorry. That was funny. I do have an art degree. I just have no authority.
You don't use it.
But, you know, that doesn't make him you know, the guy you want to have beers with.
Or make a movie with.
Oh, I wouldn't. Oh, God, no. Please, no.
Just lie down and go to sleep.
If you ever want to traumatize yourself, watch his Dracula and Dracula and his Frankenstein movies. I cannot recommend them in good conscience. But still, interesting guy. But I don't know. You know. But so
well,
many.
According to Men in Black 3, was it?
Oh yeah, of course.
He was an agent.
Oh, well, of course.
He was undercover. So was Mick Jagger, by the way.
Well, of course. But you don't necessarily know that you're going to look at him. We look at these characters, these people, mm-hmm. these individuals, these artists, these writers, these sculptors, these filmmakers, through a filter of our time.
Yeah.
Okay. And so again, you're right. We're looking at it through our own experiences, and you cannot. Ignoring the fact that Lovecraft was racist is wrong. Ignoring the fact that the world he lived in, that this was not unusual, or that there was more to that, because Lovecraft's wife was Jewish.
Right.
For someone who had said some kind of terrible things about Jews in the course of his life, he still managed to marry one. And apparently... Well,
Didn't I read somewhere that his best friend or one of his employees, somebody that he associated with quite a while, was black?
Well, it's entirely possible, because the thing is that we are not, okay, big philosophy moment, all right? We aren't one thing. Nobody is just one thing.
I'm shocked. Shocked I am.
Well, but we forget this.
Yeah.
And we're in the middle of political stupid season. I'm sorry, silly season. No, I meant stupid season.
Both.
Yes. And we're at the point where people are getting up on television, pick your side, and saying things that make the other guy or girl, man or woman, be one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So right. They're a dirty liberal or a filthy conservative. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. Okay, there's more to them. And everybody comes in shades of gray. That's just what it is. All right. So you can have people who historically,
some of us have more gray on top than others.
Oh, that's true. I have lots of gray on top, and you know what? I'm shot through with it all the way through.
Mm.
I know you listen to our voices at home, and you just think we are the paragons of virtue. And you know, there you go. But we're just people.
Oh, the stories I could tell.
And the thing is that we forget this. You know, there are, not to say there are not reprehensible, horrible human beings who need to be thrown down wells.
Right.
Because there are. But
I was struck the other day. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and was talking about the guy I was back when.
Oh, sure.
You know, and it's like, I miss that guy. I miss that guy because his life was less complicated.
Oh, sure.
And he hadn't made certain decisions yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, the decisions that I've made have brought me to this point. Now,
right.
That's both bad and good.
Sure.
Because, you know, I've got my kids and that experience in my life. But at the same time, like, man, if I just zigged when I should have zagged or whatever, right there at that, what, there was that one moment.
Right, right.
That one moment where you make a decision
mm-hmm.
that changes everything. And all of your experiences from that point shape who you are and what you believe and how you treat people and how you go through your life. And you're right. There is no black and white for anybody.
Right.
You know, you could probably get somebody who is so dogmatic about certain things.
Oh, sure.
But they're only going to be those certain things where they're going to have strong opinions about.
Yeah.
Where other things, they're either not going to care. Or it's, you know, whatever.
But you can kind of find those people, because those are the people who are that's the point, that's the thing they want you to define them by.
Right.
Because they're going, I am this, you know? Mm-hmm. And beware people who say, I am this, with level of certainty, because historically, they have caused some problems. And you got to watch out for those folks.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're unredeemable. I don't know. It's huge film noir fan. Okay.
Yep.
And which means that I'm a big fan of flawed people and broken people,
which noir is full of.
That's the point of noir. I mean, yep. it's the fear of it's regret for the past, fear of the future, and your flaws now. And that's
why I'm living it now. I'm living it now.
We're all in a film noir movie.
Yeah.
It's Dark City all over. Okay. Mm. It's. We do the. It's really, really easy to forget that we are not all of a piece. We're not plastic things that are the same all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And there are days when I think I am probably a really good example of humanity, and there are days when I'm probably a really good example of humanity and not the right ways.
Yeah, exactly. You're awful.
Exactly.
Person.
Terrible person. So
I mean, the Christmas cards you post,
well,
and the Halloween stuff
is awesome.
Yeah,
yeah. Except for the it's not the pictures which are creepy. It's the captions.
It's the stuff you write.
The
yes.
captions. I'm going to admit it. The captions are wrong, and I'm a very wrong person for posting them. But they make me laugh.
Well, I'm gonna get a little dogmatic here for a second. I'm going to say I am out of coffee. So we're going to take a break.
That is a sin and a crime.
And I'm going to correct that.
There you go.
While we hear from our sponsor, SuperheroStuff.com. Remember the Star Wars Saga Hero Box, available now through December 18th, or while supplies last. And the gift guide, the holiday gift guide, is out now. So you go to SuperheroStuff.com. And we will be back to talk about some more stuff right after this. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back, and so is our discussion of each and every episode as we gather down in the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters. Join us for recaps, analysis, and discussion, with a few digressions along the way, and you do have security clearance to listen. Level 117 every week, part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, only on scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon, or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
You want a multiverse? We've got them all. Get the latest news at scififorme.com.
88 miles per hour. Well, actually, no. 88 episode. That's what this is. This is episode 88.
And here we are in 2015.
Here we are in 2015. Dun, dun, dun. Did you see the 2015, the actual things, the Back to the Future cut?
With the trailer with 2015 in there? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
It's amazing the stuff you can do now. Yeah. I mean, that's, isn't that cool?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad too. I mean, you've got the cartoon, the animated one that says, "Oh no, we don't have hoverboards. We these, you know, the Segways."
Right.
Like, wait, what? yeah. Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here, along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
We're going to change gears a little bit. I got an email from Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
Promoting their upcoming miniseries,
yes,
Childhood's End, based on the novel by Arthur C. Clarke. And let's set this up a little bit, because this is one of those things where Sci-Fi said, we're going to make science fiction.
And we were like...
And the fans went,
huh?
And then they came. They had at the time when executives changed offices,
right?
And Bill McGoldrick came on board. At the time, you had Warehouse 13 was on, Eureka was on, Alphas was on,
right?
And Helix was the first show to come out of new management. And now you get 12 Monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
You got Ascension, which failed miserably, as it should have.
Yes.
And then we had this. Then we had word that one of the things that Bill McGoldrick had been tasked to do was not only find a space opera show and do some more space shows.
Right.
And from that, we get Killjoys. We get Dark Matter. Continuum was on, that just wrapped up.
Right.
Haven is on its last season, but you've got shows now that are science fiction shows on the network formerly known as the Sci-Fi Channel.
Right.
And then we hear about The Expanse,
mm-hmm.
which is going to be the big miniseries
right.
thing. And
early word is quite good.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. And now Childhood's End is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. What do you, what do you hope? I mean,
because
this is Arthur C. Clarke. This is Childhood's End. I mean, this is one of those books that everybody went.
Well, okay, you know? it's you get nervous, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you look at some of these things, and adaptation is hard. It's hard
yeah.
to get things done well. By the way, small plug. Yesterday, and for those of you who followed this in the past, Mr. Hunt and I here have we did a Lovecraft adaptation. Which, see how I kind of tied this back into
yeah.
the first part
yeah,
of the show.
Yeah, we did. We adapted The Statement of Randolph Carter.
Jason wrote the script and did a very fine job.
Thank you.
And we screened it. We shot it, screened it at the Kansas City Fringe Festival a couple years back. And we're never quite happy with the look of the film. There was something missing, right? So I did some changes. We screened it last night at the Terror on the Plains 4 Film Festival here in Kansas City. Or, I'm sorry, Showcase. And that was at the Kansas International Film Festival. And got many, many, many very nice things said about it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
So a little pat on our backs. But here's the thing. Adapting anything like that, one of the reasons we did it was because adapting Lovecraft is hard. Because he wrote in a very stylized manner.
And it was all first person.
All first person.
Usually.
And horror, he and Edgar Allan Poe massively influenced horror.
Mm-hmm.
It's not modern horror by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
And Statement was right in the middle of the film program last night. And I put it there on purpose. To me, it was very, very, you know, it's jump scare, blood, jump scare, scream, jump scare, blood. Carter. Jump scare, blood, jump scare. And so it was very, it stood out. It stood out to me in a really weird way. But I had folks who were basically going, no, I thought that changed the tone. And I had a couple of people come up afterwards and say, you know, it's really hard to get Lovecraft's tone right. I thought you did a really good job with that.
Great. Well, thank you. Oh, that's great.
So, but this is something that we were worried about when we were making it, and because one of the reasons we wanted to make it was because we feel that we've looked at some of the adaptations and went, okay,
mm-hmm.
I see what you did there. It's wrong, but I see what you did there, right?
Although we did lift the idea of the snow, of shooting in the snow, from one of the others, I think we looked at, didn't?
Yeah,
didn't we?
We absorbed
it. Timed out right, but there was one where we sat there and said, oh, that was. I like what they did with this.
Yeah.
And I think we've sort of kind of...
When the opportunity arose, we took it.
Mm-hmm.
It was cold.
Oh, it was terribly cold.
But the concern about adapting something is always a real one. You look at David Lynch's Dune, Okay.
But don't look at it too hard.
Well, no, the production design's gorgeous. It's a very neat looking movie.
It's
story-wise, it's not a great adaptation.
Right.
You look at the animated Lord of the Rings movies.
From Bakshi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Hobbit is gorgeous and is a pretty good adaptation of the novel into a film. The Lord of the Rings movie, the animated one, not so much.
Yeah.
And Clark. And when you get into the big ones, you get into the big names, your Clarks, your Asimovs, your Bradburys.
Well, and we talked about this before, talking about Martian Chronicles.
Yeah.
Because we think, you know, when we talked about all the remakes and reboots, we said Martian Chronicles is ripe for it because the Rock Hudson miniseries was great for what it was at the time. You talk about context and being a product of its age.
Yeah.
But the Martian Chronicles could be done again.
Oh, yeah. And honestly, it should be done again. Because that's an anthology show right there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you hear Amazing Stories is coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you get into the big names. Heinlein.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Adapting some of these things. We are never going to see a Stranger in the Strange Land movie. You're just not.
Yeah, you couldn't do it.
I don't know how you would film it. I know how you would film it. I just don't know how you could write a script for it that would be engaging. It's a philosophical novel.
But it is such a massive book that if you did any kind of adaptation for it, it would have to be a miniseries. And no network, broadcast or cable, is going to commit to the number of hours that miniseries would end up being. You're probably looking at a 10-hour thing.
Well,
unless you did it as a Netflix thing.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
That's becoming the new normal because ABC is now starting to do. Hey, we're going to do some original content over on our pay-per-view thing, and because we got Star Trek coming over to CBS All Access.
Right.
ABC is developing a comedy that's going to go on their ABC Watch thing. You could. I don't know. You could do. I don't know if you could do Stranger in a Strange Land like you do House of Cards or Sherlock, or you do a 2-hour episode every, maybe do six of them or what.
I think it would be a.
It's still going to be hard to do because of the content.
I mean,
the material, there's no. It's not an action movie, folks.
No, it's not. And I think that you're going to find that with a lot of these great pieces of science fiction, they're idea driven, they're character driven, but not necessarily.
It's like looking at all of the Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek the Motion Picture stands out because it is more cerebral and sedate, and it's slower. It's not an action picture.
Sure.
And a lot of these books are like that.
Right. Well, because you can do that in the terms of a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you're
asking the reader to look at something different anyway, as opposed to the visual and the print mediums.
Yeah.
So you get something like Childhood End or Brave New World.
They're doing an adaptation of that again.
Well, and Morgan Freeman for years has wanted to do Rendezvous with Rama.
Still does.
I know.
Yeah.
And
I've heard rumblings about a new Starship Troopers.
Well, it's going to be very, very interesting because, of course, Starship Troopers.
Like an actual faithful adaptation of Starship Troopers rather than what we got from.
We should be very curious because, of course, there's there's always been controversy about the nature of Starship Troopers because once again, people are not of just a thing.
Yeah.
Heinlein had a variety of thoughts on a variety of subjects, and sometimes he held contradictory opinions on the same things, like most people actually do. So Starship Troopers, of course, is either an indictment of the military mindset or a glorification of the military mindset. So, it's a novel that tells a story about things. But Childhood's End is in many ways exactly what's on the tin. I mean, it's the name of the book, what some of the ideas that you're playing with there. And
yeah,
humanity would be the child in this particular case. It's a big idea. It's first contact. It's the effects of first contact on the world. It's where we go. It's
what happens after.
It makes me nervous because, you know, it's getting Clark right, getting Asimov right.
Can you imagine doing Foundation?
Well, they keep talking about doing one. But you know what? Here's it. Do iRobot.
The real one.
The real one.
Yeah.
Not to knock. I own the Will Smith movie, guys. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, but it's a fun romp.
However,
it's not iRobot.
Right. But there's your miniseries. There's your single episode, 10-episode show.
I wonder if we could do that. I wonder if we could get the rights to that.
Well, see what we find out. Because it's, you know, it is a short story collection. It's structured that way. Or give me Caves of Steel, Asimov, because that's a film noir science fiction right there. So, there's good stuff there. I mean, it's neat ideas. It's big ideas, and if it's got Charles Dance,
yeah.
So that's kind of a good sign.
Childhood's End is going to be on two nights, starts December 14th, which is just a few days shy of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which has absolutely nothing to do with our topic tonight, but
however,
I just thought I'd throw that in
there.
Just
point that out, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, do you know Star Wars? There's a new Star Wars movie coming out. Have you heard about that?
Some space movie thingy.
Yeah. Oh, and they are dumping so much information on us right now. It's like every day there's like some new thing. It's like
see the new pictures.
Oh yeah. Or you know,
somebody, and I haven't seen it yet, but I saw a link to it come across my feed today. I think somebody has cut together everything so far.
Oh, I'm sure
in some sort of order that actually
appears
plays through and tells a story, and people are going, you know, that actually makes a certain amount of sense. You know, that actually fits with a lot of the rumors that we're hearing from people like MakingStarWars.net and IO9 and Ain't It Cool. And wait a minute. Spoilers.
Yeah. No, it's you know, I'm kind of excited about Childhood's End. I want to keep mangling the last part of childhood.
My childhood was mangled. Yeah. No, it wasn't until I got to college. So.
I'm kind of excited about it because I think if they get it right, and it seems to me in this particular case, they are concerned about that, and that's good.
That's good. That is a very good. Now, did this book win a Hugo? I think it did.
I believe it did. I believe it won several awards.
So it needs to be on our list of books we're going to read prior to the Hugos being here in Kansas City in August. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to read my copy, and I think you've got a copy.
I do.
We should read these, before the adaptation comes out, so we've got it fresh in our heads to look and see and say.
Oh, sure.
How did they do that?
And for the folks at home, if I may make a recommendation, remember, of course, that different mediums are different mediums. And that some things do not translate well.
And that's the trick.
Yeah.
That's the thing right there that causes the trepidation. Because if you look and you read a book, the Honor Harrington series comes to mind from David Weber.
Sure.
Because in that set of stories, the war, the battle, the combat, the space combat is very much like you would expect it to be. I mean, it takes 3 hours for the ships to intersect.
Right. Physics
applies. You know, you fire the missiles, it'll take 20 minutes to get to their target and that kind of thing. Like, how are you going to do that?
Right.
In filmed medium, because because Weber and I talked about it one time in Omaha. There's a 3-part interview on our website where we talked about all sorts of things, politics being one of them, but you know, politics within his stories and
right.
and stuff. But he says that the company that was working on doing the TV and film adaptations came up with a way of making the combat scenarios work with the compressed time frame that you're having to deal with, and they're finally moving forward with it. Now I know we've nice. gotten some comic books,
right?
But I haven't seen anything else yet. I need to check and see what the status is on all of that stuff, because we're friends on Facebook now,
right?
So I'll have to send them a note.
Well, but you see that if they get that right.
Yeah, it's hard to do though.
Oh yeah, well it's okay.
Because you have to figure out the visual. I mean, you can take 12 pages, or in the case of something like Moby Dick, 13 chapters to describe the water. You know, you can do that in printed form. You can tell that story with an exhaustive amount of detail on where you are, what it looks like, how it works, everything that you can't do in 2 hours.
Right.
4 hours.
Well, and I think that some of these you have to make the decision that you know is going to upset people.
Right.
Because the limitations of the medium, or because look, you may have this beautiful internal monologue that a character has. And, you know, where they're asking themselves the deep questions and the powerful, you know, big thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's death on camera.
Unless you're Shakespeare.
And even then.
Well,
and voiceovers are hard. And this that's the only way to really do internal monologue.
Yeah, and this is what we ran into with Randolph Carter. Because, mm-hmm. when, you know, like you said, the story that Lovecraft wrote is all first person. It is told from the point of view of Randolph Carter after the fact. So we know he's still alive after whatever it is that he's had happen.
Sure.
But it's obvious from the text that he's talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the challenge for us was to figure out, okay, how do we make this work as a scene, as a filmed on-screen dialogue? And you have to extrapolate the other side of the conversation based on what Carter is saying.
Right.
And in that particular case, it was, I don't want to say it was easy, but you got the prompt, because Carter would sit there and say, you say that I was seen
sure.
walking down, uh-huh. you know, the, I mean, it's like, okay, well, somebody must have said that. So you can extrapolate, and you can come up with that other half of the dialogue for those things.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a challenge to get this right.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And there's plenty of ways you could get it wrong.
Yeah, and that's really...
We're seeing that with Minority Report.
Oh, yeah. Which is... The film had a lot of elements of film noir in it. It had very much that kind of classic
mm-hmm.
Detective kind of story built in there, and I think they balanced it pretty well.
Yeah.
And the TV show just doesn't know what it's doing, I'm afraid. So yeah, you have to look at this stuff and ask yourself, okay, can I make this like the book in the way that the book or the short story or, and come back to context, you know, look at who goes there. Okay. The short story, which inspired three movies called The Thing.
Yeah.
But Thing from Another World with James Arness is very bare bones compared to, I mean, in terms of the concept.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
But at the time, you could not do an adaptation. You could not do a straight adaptation. It was impossible to do a straight adaptation.
Yeah, because the technology didn't exist.
Well, the technology, but also you couldn't show that kind of stuff. Even if the technology existed, you couldn't show that kind of stuff in a movie.
Oh, right, yeah, because that was 1953.
Yeah, the audience,
and people would have gone,
well, and this, you know, and this, the censors wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't allow it.
Uh-huh.
So you get a film that is, I think, a really enjoyable movie. It's not a faithful adaptation of the book, of the short story.
Yeah.
So you have to look at each thing on its own. And oh, if it's a bad adaptation, by all means, criticize it for being a bad adaptation. We have seen those couple of three out there that are I believe the word I'm looking for is crap. but you have to not everybody's got a Lord of the Rings budget.
No. Well, and not everybody has the right perspective when they're making a film based on something else. I mean, mm-hmm. we've talked about this before with things like Bionic Woman reboot.
Right.
Or the Knight Rider update mm-hmm. or Starsky and Hutch or the Dukes of Hazzard or, sure. To get out of the genre for a second. You talk about context. Mm-hmm. What is the intent of the people making the film?
Sure.
And, you get somebody like Ben Stiller or a Woody Allen, Woody Allen making a James Bond film. I mean, really?
Really? Oh, but Casino, the first version of Casino Royale, which is nowhere near, for the folks of you who are just thinking of the Daniel Craig version, there is another version prior to that, which was a comedy.
Exactly.
I mean, it's David Niven. And
I know, but I'm just saying.
Oh, I know.
If somebody sits there and you go, Woody Allen making a James Bond movie?
Exactly, yeah.
What?
Be crazy,
You expect it to be a comedy.
Peter Sellers playing James Bond, what?
Yeah.
It's... Or they just don't understand the material. They don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Gem.
Yeah.
Gem and the Holograms.
It's already been pulled from theaters.
Yeah, well, it's because they clearly don't grasp the material. Masters of the Universe.
Oh, the one with Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy who worked on that script was here in town a couple 3 weeks ago. He was giving a seminar on screenwriting. So he worked on several Hollywood pictures, but that was the one that leapt out at me. I'm like,
that wasn't Bob Gale, was it?
I think that probably was Bob Gale.
Was it?
Yeah.
Really? Did he work on that?
Yeah.
I have to look that up.
So I think
you know Bob Gale also with Robert Zemeckis wrote Back to the Future.
Yeah, I think I want to say that's who it was. But anyway, we had Kansas City get some great people coming through.
Because we're one of the coolest cities to live.
Well, yeah.
According to the Huffington Post.
That's right. So it's a tough thing, and I wish them well of it over at SIFI. Sci-fi. I'll be nice. Because they're doing something that we wanted them to do a long time ago.
Yeah.
Which is get back into what they're supposed to be doing. And I want a good adaptation.
Oh, I do too. I do too.
Because that maybe opens the door for another good adaptation and gives us more of this, because so many of these classic stories are untapped. We've never had iRobot. We've never had Caves of Steel. We've never had Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
We've never had The Cat Who Walks Through Walls.
Oh, that would be fun.
We've never had... And we've got the effects. We can do it now. We can do so much of this stuff now.
Yeah.
We've never had... they keep threatening to remake Something Wicked This Way Comes, and I really don't want them to, but...
You know what I would like to see? And maybe this is something you have to do on Netflix. I would like to see an anthology series based on Spider Robinson's Callahan's Cross Time
Saloon.
Love it.
I would absolutely love it. You could do it. You could do it without any trouble. And you could actually...
That would be so much fun.
You could actually do a season of just short stories and then do like a season, like four episodes where you just adapt the novels.
Yeah.
Well,
Ben Bova's got some good stuff that hasn't been adapted yet.
Oh, there are so many great writers.
I mean, granted... When it comes to science fiction, I'm of two minds when it comes to adaptations.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfectly fine if you want to do an adaptation, as long as you do it well and it's executed right. But I also want to see original stuff. I want to see new stuff. Everything over and over and over and over and over again. Reboots and remakes out the yin yang. Give me something new. And I'm hopeful that if they get the adaptations right, then the track record is there for writers, producers, directors who can sit there and go, okay, We did it with Childhood's End.
Mm-hmm.
We did it with Something Wicked This Way Comes. We did it with Brave New World. Here's this new idea we want to try.
Oh, sure.
And maybe that gets us the next Star Trek, the next Doctor Who, the next, you know, a Logan's Run or a Buck Rogers or something, something that holds up and is fresh and new and not a retread of something we've had before.
That would be great. I'd really love to see that.
In the meantime, we're going to try to get the rights to iRobot.
That's true.
I wonder how much that is.
I don't know.
We're going to have to look into that.
Now, see, I've got all these properties spinning around in my head of things I want to see. Can you imagine a ring world?
You know, and that takes us back to the beginning of our conversation. Some people have suggested that be the new fantasy statue.
Oh, okay. But
the elephants on the turtle?
Oh, yeah.
That as the statue.
Hey, you know what? In terms of a legacy thing, the kind of thing where you can you're not only starting a new thing, but you're also giving a nod to Pratchett.
Yeah,
that's not a bad idea.
We don't have too many bad ideas here.
But when we do,
they're doozies.
Boy, we're good at them. So,
speaking ideas, if you have any of your own, and I'm sure you do, you can share those with us. You can call our hotline, 573-42-SCI-FI, or you can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. Or you can leave a comment on our main site, scififorme.com. You can find us on the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr. We're picking up some more activity over on Tumblr.
Are we?
Yeah. If you're into cosplay, we've just posted a couple of cosplay stories this week, and our Pinterest boards are all cosplay all the time. So if you know people who like to wear what's costumes, go share that with them.
Mm-hmm.
And check out our YouTube channel. We've got plenty of stuff there. We've got convention panel video. We've got interviews with celebrities and writers and artists and actors and all sorts of good stuff over there. In the meantime, we're going to start reading Childhood's End.
Yeah.
And be back next week for another episode. Timothy Harvey, thanks very much for sitting there.
Always a pleasure.
Putting up with my ugly mug. Wait, my mug is really nice. I got a nice mug here. It's got a logo on it and everything.
It's our logo.
Yeah, it is. It is. And this is a good mug. All right, I'm going to go fill it with more coffee. And you guys can check out our other podcasts over at Sci-Fi From Your Radio, and we will be back with another episode of H2O next week.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.